Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. American images of retirement grew pretty sweet in the 20th century. Golf, sunshine, travel, ease. Now the whole picture is in turmoil. Pensions, history, 401ks in trouble, home values, the piggy bank, way down. And retirement is up against some harsh realities. Think you're too young to care? Wait till mom and dad move in. This hour, On Point Retirement and the Financial Crisis. It's a whole new world. Joining us from Atlanta, Georgia today is Glenn Rufinack. He edits Encore, the Wall Street Journal's bi-monthly retirement guide. He's also author of the Wall Street Journal Complete Retirement Guidebook, How to Plan It, Live It, and Enjoy It. Glenn, thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be here.
Great to have you. And with us from New York is Teresa Gallarducci. She's director of the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis at the New School for Social Research. She's testified before Congress on the future of retirement and pensions. Her latest book is When I'm 64. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Teresa Gallarducci, thanks very much for joining us today.
And thank you. It's an honor to be with you again.
It's great to have you. I think a lot of people, Teresa, and you know it, everybody knows it, have been afraid to look, afraid to open, you know, the reports on their savings. What does the picture look like out there today when it comes to American retirement?
It looks like that workers who are 55 and younger will face worse retirement prospects than their parents and grandparents. This is the first generation since the beginning of Social Security and employers providing more pensions that the elderly are going to actually reverse the gains that they've made. And it's very depressing.
Worse than parents and grandparents, but it's been at least our image of what retirement has become has looked pretty sweet. It looked like you could knock, a few degrees of luxury off and still be all right. Is it a little worse, a lot worse? What's looming?
You know, it actually looks like for middle class and working class people that what I mean by worse is that we may actually reverse the gains we've made in longevity. Let me explain. What the retirement system allowed is people of all income classes the time to have free time at the end of their careers. For working and middle class people, a pension meant dignity at the end of their lives. It also meant actually a little bit more improved health, more time to sleep, to eat, to actually have the nutritional content that they needed. I am predicting that in the next 3 years, we're going to see the elderly now, because of their shock of the 401k plans, actually have some nutritional deficits.
So literally shorter lives.
Shorter lives, more depression caused by all this anxiety. And it's really a reversal.
And during the years that retirees do live, what is the quality of life likely to be like compared to what it has been, our expectations?
Yeah, well, researchers have known that when retirees have a secure form of income for the rest of their lives, that the security matters almost as much as the amount of income. So since people are getting their pensions from these insecure sources, not only just 401ks, but this occasional part-time job, we are convinced that this will mean more anxiety and actually more depression.
Glenn, for people looking at retirement in the next, 5-10 years, how's it look out there? We'll look at the longer horizon, but what about those who are staring at it right now?
Well, I think you're right, Tom. I think there are a couple of different horizons to look at, and we need to be really careful about looking at people who are approaching retirement and people who are, say, more than 5 or 10 years away. I think for those approaching retirement, certainly those right on the cusp of retirement or already in retirement, clearly they're going to be in for some difficult times. We already have the anecdotal evidence about people cutting their budgets, slashing withdrawals from 401ks, canceling trips. It's going to be a rough road short term for those people. But I think you also have to look at people in their 50s and 40s. We have to remember that the baby boom generation just now is reaching age 62. Mm. So the vast majority of boomers are still in their 40s and 50s. And at the risk of being Pollyannish about this, if they take the lessons of this meltdown to heart, they can really take some important steps now for their retirement down the road.
But what does that mean? Because the lessons that we've been taught, everybody's heard them for how many decades now is, you know, pensions are going away, take your money, put it in the stock market, and you'll be fine. But that hardly seems like the lesson of the last year. I see $4 trillion in retirement plans shrinkage in the last year.
Well, you're absolutely right. The lessons have been out there in the media, certainly financial advisors. Everyone's been giving Americans the same advice for years. But the problem is people haven't been acting on the advice. Each year, the Employee Benefit Research Institute in Washington comes out with a retirement confidence survey. And this year, they found that only 23% of Americans in their 50s have $250,000 or more in their nest egg. In other words, three-quarters of people in their 50s have less than $250,000. So even though those lessons have been out there, people have not been taking it to heart.
But Glenn, the song you're singing there sounds like the song of a year ago where people were saying save more. Now the people who did save, who put it in that 401k, have seen it whacked down, many by almost half.
Yes. Again, no question about that. People who are right on the edge of retirement are going to have to delay retirement. Some people who are retired are going to have to return to work. Absolutely no question about that. But we have to remember we have two groups of people here. We have those people who, again, who are on the cusp of retirement, who are already retired, and we have people in their 40s and 50s who are still planning for retirement. And I don't think we should say to them, forget it. You know, it's over for you. You're not going to be able to enjoy retirement. You're not going to be able to have a retirement. You know, we can't tell them that that dream or their desires for retirement are simply washed up.
Teresa, sometimes it seems like the real lesson here is kind of you can't get there from here. The pensions, defined benefit pensions, went away. In the early 80s, I'm looking here at 1980, 60% had pensions. They knew exactly what they'd get, you know, all through their life. Today, something like 8% have only that. 401ks way up, and many people didn't save enough, but many did sock a lot away only to see it shrink. So you don't have a pension. The stock savings path, which was supposed to float people by the growth in the value of those stocks, has now turned around and bitten people. So what is the lesson here?
Yeah, let's parse out what Glenn said. I think that Glenn is right. There's probably about 20% of 40 and 50-year-olds, even younger, who have learned their lessons that they should save whenever they can. The lesson is painful. If you're young, you should save at least 5% of every paycheck. So maybe they will be persuaded by education. But the past 15 years of research on how well education and advice, how far it goes in getting people to take responsibility for their own retirement is very, very limited. And so even if you learn the lessons that you are on your own, that you need to save enough to supplement Social Security to get to 70% of your pre-retirement earnings into retirement, many people, despite the lesson and the virtue of saving, won't be able to do it, especially since we are entering the worst recession since the Great Depression.
But I think a lot of people are going to say, wait a minute, was it somehow the wrong lesson? I saved, and now my savings are gone. I should have spent it on a convertible.
Actually, we're very concerned about the lesson learned with this collapse of savings that people thought were safe was that it's going to actually reduce the savings rate. You're absolutely right. And that more people will actually be fatalistic and say, I might as well just live for today. And because they actually don't trust banks because of the bank, because of what's happening in the housing market. It is complicated. And I think that Glenn is talking about maybe people who read the Wall Street Journal, you know, who have a long-time horizon. But for a great majority of people, we have to realize that the 401k, the do-it-yourself pension plan, is an experiment that's highly, highly flawed. And we should think about bringing back the traditional pension plan, getting employers in an orderly way involved in retirement planning and also looking forward and constructing a hybrid between these savings accounts and guaranteed pensions.
We'll talk about what that might look like. Glenn, for a lot of people, the house was the piggy bank. I mean, the value, the ever apparently ever-growing value of American homes was the keystone of what they counted on for retirement. Now, home values have fallen so much. How significant is that for the overall profile of American retirees facing, you know, golden years?
I think it's very significant. It's one of the lies we all told ourselves about retirement, as much as I hate to say that. Our home was the piggy bank, and if the worst happened, we could always fall back on our home and draw down the value of that home. But as we have seen clearly, home values are not immune from any of this. They can fall as well. So I think Teresa's making some good points. I think that the 401k at this moment certainly looks as if it's not working. But we also have to be realistic and look at what companies might or might not do in the future. Companies have been trying to get these pensions obligations off their books, and they're not going to just turn around and re-embrace pensions. I think what we might see in the future is hybrids of 401ks, pensions. I think people are starting to figure out what some of these things might look like.
You know, the last time the country went through something like this, the Great Depression, we rolled out Social Security. But this time it's already been rolled out, and it itself is widely said to be in trouble. So it just leaves a person scratching their head. Glenn Rufinek, please stand by with The Wall Street Journal and Teresa Ghilarducci in New York. We've got a lot to look at here on the front of American retirement and what it is becoming. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Do not despair, but we're checking it out. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about how the economic crisis is ransacking retirement, changing lives and expectations by the day, changing what retirement may mean for generations to come. Teresa Ghilarducci is with us from the New School of Social Science. Her new book is When I'm 64. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Glenn Rufinek is here from Atlanta, Georgia. He's with The Wall Street Journal, developed and edits the Encore section in The Wall Street Journal. He's author of The Wall Street Journal Complete Retirement Guidebook, How to Plan It, Live It, and Enjoy It. Glenn, I'm curious about just the economics of the whole, well, the economy that's been built up around retirement. For example, a lot of people sell their homes and move into retirement communities. You know, you can spend $100,000 at the low end, or $500,000, or $1,000,000, a lot. But that all depends on those homes having a bunch of value to bring to the table so that it all rolls on. If that pipeline dries up, if you don't have new people who can sell their homes for these giddy prices to buy in, what happens to that whole system out there?
Well, you're right, Tom. It's a big question for that part of the real estate industry. So-called active adult communities have actually been a bright spot in recent years in the real estate market. We're seeing more of these developments not only across the South and Southwest, but in the Midwest and the Northeast. And I think builders right now are scratching their heads and trying to figure out just what might be left of that market in the coming years.
You know, I was out with my in-laws in one of these in Oregon not long ago. Absolutely gorgeous. Just a tremendous facility. But you can feel the whole thing floating on those high home prices that this generation, the current retired generation, was able to cash in on, Glenn.
That's right. It's already a question whether people are going to be able to sell their homes and then relocate. Again, we can see the anecdotal information already. People putting those plans on hold, delaying those plans. And you're certainly seeing houses sitting empty or lots sitting empty in what were once prosperous or hoped to be prosperous retirement communities.
Teresa, we've been joking about moving in with the kids, but maybe it's not a joke.
Yeah.
What about that? Is that going to become – I mean, we sort of associate that with, I don't know, the Waltons and old days on the prairie. But could that become the norm or something like it?
You know, I mean, one of the signs of a civilized, wealthy society is that adult children, you know, live apart from their adult, you know, parents. And we can be concerned that people can't downsize and go into, you know, their dream retirement home. But we also see in the data that home equity among older people is falling, precipitously sure. because of home equity loans. So it's not just the value of the house is falling, but also that they've been eating
their equity.
Mm-hmm. They've been eating their equity. So we're concerned about people not being able to sell their homes, but actually being able to make the mortgage, you know, in their 60s. So we are looking, we will see, I predict, a lot of home foreclosures on older people. And where are they going to go? They're going to double up in their, in my book, I actually talk about someone who had to move into his daughter's garage. And you could tell from that elderly person that it wasn't just so much the inconvenience to his daughter, but a shock and a lack of dignity by having to do that, you know, on both parties. So we're going to see a lot of home losses, a lot of homeless among the elderly. One bright spot is that Social Security is actually becoming a more important source of income for the elderly, and that is a safe source of income that is actually indexed to inflation. So what was lost in the last month when people – lost in the news when people were losing their 401k value, Social Security benefits on average went up by about $60 a month. So we'll see more reliance on Social Security, which means public policy actually might want to look at that model, a universal mandatory pension system, you know, across the across all the workforce, and look at ways that people could actually save through the Social Security system to kind of beef up that that annuity.
We'll look at the possibility of changes there. And, of course, there are all the questions about Social Security itself. But, Teresa, just paint for us, a picture of what it is like to – In the American economy today, if you have to live on a Social Security payment, give us a sense of the texture of that life. What does that mean to retire on Social Security and maybe nothing more?
Sure. If you were a working class person, an even average earner, and you paid off your house and you actually have good health insurance, living on Social Security was almost doable. You probably had to supplement, you know, a bit with some savings. For very low-income people, Social Security, about 25% of all retirees, is their only retirement. It doesn't impoverish you, and many older people on Social Security are in poverty, but it's a good base. But really, for most of us, we should not count on Social Security, not because Social Security isn't to be counted on. It's going to be a system that will be there for us, I'm convinced.
So you say, many say otherwise.
Yes, but among the experts, this is actually what we count on. It's just not enough. It's for most of us to live on. So we need to supplement, and we need a smarter supplement to Social Security than the 401k system.
Well, look at that. Glenn, for many people, it's a godsend and a safety net. But think about your readers of the Wall Street Journal retiring on Social Security, well, the kind of whiplash that would mean for people.
Sure, it would. You know, we have to try to remember that we have this three-legged stool that we've been talking about for years, and we think that
with that Social Security plus
Social Security plus personal savings plus your retirement plan at work. So you know, we trust that people have been trying to save some money, mm-hmm. and we'll see some money from their retirement plan at work. But again, there's no question that we're going to be in for a difficult period of time here for a lot of those retirees.
Let's hear from our listeners. Bill in Ames, Iowa. You're on the air, Bill. Hi.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Thanks very much. I think you're speaking for a vast majority of us out here. Maybe, I don't know if the silent majority, not very silent, but we...
At the moment.
We're seeing right. You know, we've saved for retirement. We've put most of our money, especially the ones that are long-term, into mutual funds for the most part. Mm. We've had our houses and our mortgages based on, you know, our income and all the traditional ways. But, you know, the rug has been brought out from under us. I mean, you know, everybody keeps saying, just wait, it'll come back. You know, the rules of the market will take place and they'll continue and they'll bring everything back. But from our point of view, we don't have any trust in the system anymore, because it's not like a natural disaster where something just happened that was out of people's control. This was greed that people were doing in back rooms and so forth, that those of us who are then now, you know, one half of our retirement is gone, we feel like suckers.
Bill, is this your story? Are you talking about your own situation?
Of course, yes. I'm 53. I've done everything what I consider to be right. I don't mean to be righteous about it, just everything according to the rules.
Yeah.
And the rug has been brought out from under us. How do we know that something very similar to this isn't going to happen again, number one? And number two, you know, why should we be putting our money into a system that we have no idea what's going on behind closed doors.
There you go. Bill, thank you very much for your call. Teresa, I think that's a widespread attitude out there right now. People feeling kind of snookered, like, hey, you know, if they did the right thing and half of it's now gone, they're thinking, well, geez, that's vacations I could have took. What happened here? And should I buy in again to anybody's advice? Where does that skepticism take us?
Yeah, no, I actually think that there is a tragic loss of trust in the institutions that were out there to help us save for our own retirement. And you referenced the Great Depression last time, generating a bold program like Social Security. Mm. I think that we'll see in the next year Congress and the president talking about another bold program, because we haven't talked about the economy that much, but it is probably the worst recession that we've seen, at least all workers have ever seen.
But what's left to do? What's the bold program? We've got Social Security, the other legs of the stool in trouble. What new innovation could there be?
It would actually be a broad supplement to Social Security. Social Security was purposely meant to be kind of a base. I actually disagree with the image of the stool because it actually implies that all legs were equal size. Mm-hmm. For most people, it's a pyramid with Social Security on the base where you need that you grow in. You layer on top an employer pension and your personal savings. I think we're going to have to make that base a little bit larger.
But the word is we can barely afford Social Security. How do we massively supplement that? How would that? Where would that come from? What magic?
Yes, we're going to have to actually have employers and employees save more. But we also have to remember that the 401k system is heavily subsidized by tax breaks. We spend $80 billion a year giving tax breaks, incenting those 401k systems.
That is
it's
tax-free
time.
Growth of whatever you put in there, of course, unless it falls.
And we have to ask who's getting that money. Does it actually provide retirement savings for a broad group of people? Half the people out there have no access to 401ks or any other kind of pension.
So you would take away that tax break in reading your plan and take that $80 billion or something, and put it towards supplementing more broadly in the population?
You know, that's the academic plan. That's the extreme version to make my point that $80 billion isn't working. 401ks work for some people, and for some people they deserve to have that tax break. But the maximum amount you can put in and have it tax-free is $20,500 for people over 50. Mm-hmm. Well, there's very few people who take advantage of that, and they don't need the help as much as the people at the lower end.
The people who are getting
the break now. So not to go, drill down mm-hmm. in the details, but we need my plan does call for everybody to be in a Social Security supplemental plan.
Let's take a call from Durham, New Hampshire. Michael. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I've worked for 26 years for a big company. They've promised me a pension. I go online, look at it. I mean, it appears that by the time I'm 65, including Social Security for both me and my wife, we should have an income of over $100,000 a year.
Sounds not too bad.
No, not too bad. But then, I mean, it's a major corporate. I mean, it's the Walt Disney Company. I mean, what is their actual obligation?
Oh, I could answer that. Or Glenn.
Teresa, please.
Yeah, just the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, a government agency since mid-1970s, guarantees your pension. So if you have a defined benefit plan, you could, and you're in a big corporation, even if that corporation fails, that promise is funded, and the extent that it's not funded, the PBGC will backstop that. So you're actually in good shape, and I'm very pleased to hear it.
But it was only earlier this year when we had some big failures to deliver on pensions, and that fund had to be tapped. We heard, Teresa, that maybe it wouldn't have enough money to cover if too many corporations started backing out or being unable to fulfill their obligations.
Well, there were in the airline industry, there were mm-hmm. some unfunded plans or partially funded plans that did fail, and PBGC came in. And if there's widespread collapse, the PBGC will need money from general revenues. So there is some risk, but it's a lot less risk than we're seeing in the 401k world. I'm not being Pollyannish about it. There's risk if the economy collapses, but people in defined benefit plans are in much better shape.
Michael, I hope those are comforting words. Let's take a call from Providence, Rhode Island, and Robin. Hi, Robin. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Well, what do you know, Robin?
Well, I'm 61 years old.
Okay.
I've always had great jobs. I've been unemployed for 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
My wife died 2 years ago.
Sorry.
Headhunters say I'm eminently employable, but it's been absolutely impossible for me to find a job. And I think most of the people that are giving you advice in terms of what to do these days are being totally irrational in their assertions that older people need to go back to work or to work longer, when the true reality of the situation is that most major companies won't even consider interviewing somebody over the age of 55.
So how are you thinking about that reality, Robin?
I've gotten to the point where I've decided to use what retirement funds I have left. I'm cashing in at 401k today, and I'm using the retirements I have left to start a new business in Providence, which opened on Saturday.
And hey, we hope that that goes like gangbusters,
Thank you very much.
But if it doesn't, if it shouldn't, and you can't get work in your field, can you picture yourself, you know, bagging groceries at 69?
Well, I'll tell you this. I've reached a point. I have a very good education and a great resume. And recently I applied for a job at Panera and did everything I could possibly do to get the job. And even they wouldn't.
That's like sandwich and pastry shop, and you couldn't get that one either.
No, now I'm applying for jobs I don't even want.
Robin,
I'm being rejected for jobs I don't even want.
I hope your business is a tremendous success, and good luck with it. Glenn, what do you hear? What do you see? Because everybody's heard this advice now. Hey, you know, your greatest safety is just to keep working. But is that realistic? Robin is not finding it so.
Oh, I think Robin, unfortunately, serves as a model for a lot of people. Yes, the advice is keep working, or if you're retired, return to work. But it's really tough. Even retail jobs, as Robin points out, are hard to come by. And retail jobs were always the kind of employment of last resort. I mean, one thing that we do see, one change that we see online networks springing up to try to match older workers with companies. So you see websites like retirementjobs.com and retiredbrains.com and youroncore.com. And I think we're going to see more of these sites down the road.
But are there lots of jobs brimming on them to be had? Again, Robin's saying get real. Major corporations are not fishing that heavily in these older waters.
Oh, I think there are certainly some jobs there, but he's right. It's going to be tough to find them.
Teresa, what about the keep working advice? Everybody gives it. How realistic is it?
Yeah. It's one of the most specious, forms of advice because it doesn't work for most people. Most people intend to actually keep on working and retire longer than they actually do. And the reason why they have to retire is, one, health reasons, and two, because they've been laid off. And this recession is going to go on for probably a couple of years, and that advice is just empty. I'm sorry that his wife died, because we find out that older workers who have lost their jobs, if they're married, have a much better chance of kind of keeping their standard of living up during a fallow period. So he'll need family networks, friend networks, when he runs out with his 401k. And I do hope his company does succeed, but that's always very hard to do in a recession.
Are people, in fact, going to be moving back with their kids? Can you picture that? Is it already happening, Teresa?
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely it's happening. I saw it when I lived in South Bend, when I was teaching at Notre Dame, that people were losing their pensions, and there was a huge boom in rehabbing garages and backyard huts because of that. And sometimes it works out, but it's always a second or third choice.
Backyard huts. Now, there's a phrase. There's a phrase not many people wanted to associate with retirement. Let's hope we don't have to too much. Teresa Ghilarducci, please stand by in New York. Glenn Rupinek with the Wall Street Journal in Atlanta, Georgia. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Go to Ross in Davenport, Iowa. Hi, Ross. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome.
Hey, wouldn't health care be a good solution to the whole thing?
What do you mean, health care? Health care reform of some kind?
Retirees have greater health care needs, And if you solve those needs, doesn't it get us out of a lot of trouble?
What kind of solution?
Turn insurance agents into health care deliverers. That'd be great.
I don't know if I want my insurance agent as my doctor, but do you mean some kind of you mean national health care reform of some kind, Ross?
Sure.
That's a big element of retirement expense, that's for sure. Glenn, how about it? Do you think is this crisis in the retirement realm going to filter into the national health care reform debate and what comes out of it?
Yeah, I think it will. Clearly, one of the big problems that people have been recognizing about retirement is just how big a bite health care bills are going to take out of their savings. It's one reason why people have been working longer or trying to return to work. And you see proposals out there to perhaps expand Medicare, allow people to buy into Medicare earlier. But President-elect Obama certainly seems to indicate that he wants to keep health care reform at the top of his agenda. So we'll have to see what he does in the coming year.
Teresa, do you see, let's say it is the Obama health care plan, is that a significant enough reform of our current system that it would help out retirees? Because that's a big chunk of what people spend, of course, as they age.
Yeah, there is a group of retirees, you know, kind of middle class and above retirees that spend a lot of their money on supplementing Medicare or actually bridging the time when they retire to Medicare age at 65. And so that would help that group who already, you know, have a big supplement. Luckily, we have the Medicare system. So for many retirees, most of their health care is paid for by the Medicare system. I expect that Obama will be looking at proposals to lower the Medicare age to 55 and let people buy into it. That's going to be very, very expensive. But, what kinds of budget limits do we have now in the federal budget?
Yeah,
I mean, everything is open.
Could be pretty severe.
That would help. But also there was another aspect to that to that question that was pretty sophisticated, and that is that health care may be the new growth industry. And that's actually true. We certainly see it in places like Detroit and places in this country where there's a lot of older people. And that is a bright light that we're actually seeing federal money coming into these pockets of real economic downturns, and healthcare is the only growth industry. So it might be a place that older people can get jobs, but we can't really grow an economy by just the service industry. We do need strong manufacturing as well.
Wow, be a hospital orderly and see your friends and aging neighbors as they come in. Oh boy, Amy in Boston, you're on the air. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you?
Well, what do you think about all this, Amy?
Well, I'm 28, and I'm wondering where I should go from here. I invest about 5% of my income into an IRA currently.
Yeah.
And I work for a local government, and I have a pension plan. But I'm wondering, should I start putting more into savings? Should I increase what I'm putting into my IRAs to try to buy things when they're low so I get a bigger return when I retire, or where I should be going?
Amy, we'll ask, but let me ask you. You've got a government job. Government pensions, I mean, government jobs are some of the few that still give defined benefit pensions. Is that part of the reason you're working for the government at your age?
Yeah, I just got the job, 4 months ago. I was like, I need to get into something that's a little more secure. I was self-employed, so the only retirement that I had was what I was saving, and that's one of the reasons I got the government job.
That's amazing. Maybe government jobs have become a little more attractive. Amy, let us pick it up. Teresa, Amy's got a government job in part for those benefits that she'll accrue years from now to come back to her, but she's still asking what to do with her savings along the way. I think people just don't know what to do now.
First of all, I'd like to clone Amy or put her on public service ads all over the world. She's an amazing model. Amy, this is my advice. You should max out in your local government supplement to their pension plan, their 403B or 457s, because those are usually better managed than where you're putting your IRA money. You should increase savings, even if it's in your IRA, but make sure you buy the mutual funds that have the lowest fees. And that's actually hard to find out, but just insist on it. But 5% is actually a good rate if you keep it dedicated to retirement. Avoid all temptation to use it for all the other things that are going to come up in your life. So make sure you also have a more liquid savings account as well. Glenn, you might want to back me up on this.
Glenn, Warren Buffett and some others are getting into the stock market now. Amy's 28, so maybe it's a good time for her. On the other hand, she might take away the lesson that, you know, years of saving can still turn to dust in that market. And watch out.
Well, we have to keep a long-term perspective, and I know people are angry. People want to be made whole, but that doesn't mean we should turn our backs on the stock market completely. I think long-term stocks are a good investment to give you the kind of return you need for long retirements, and that's what we're looking at, retirements that can last 20 or 30 years. I think Amy, for example, could take advantage of a Roth IRA where when she does pull out that money later in life, there will be no taxes on withdrawals, and there will be no required withdrawals either. So, again, we can't turn our back on stocks completely. We shouldn't turn our backs on stocks completely. And I think Amy's the perfect example of a person who long-term can still benefit from stocks.
That's a message you've heard for a long time, and people eating some bitter lunch on it right now. Molly in Bluffton, South Carolina. Molly, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Hello.
Hi, Molly.
Well, my comment is I'm 62 years old,
mm-hmm.
Had been like in advertising, marketing all my life,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden found that jobs were rather scarce.
Yep.
And I have gone to work for the Starbucks Corporation as a barista. And it is the most wonderful company I have ever worked for as far as fair treatment. The work is enjoyable. The people are enjoyable. I have health insurance for my husband and myself for $140 a month for the first time in 6 years. And I would highly recommend to anyone out there that's any age, that if you're looking for a good company to work for, check with your local Starbucks.
Hey, Molly, I'm sure people are thinking about that kind of thing now. So let me ask you a few things. First of all, what's your hourly wage there?
It's $8.50.
$8.50, and how many hours a week do you work at 62?
I work anywhere between 20 and 35 hours a week. You only have to, as it stands right now, work 20 hours a week to receive the insurance benefit.
What's the longest day you work? Do you ever put in 8 hours as a barista these days?
Yes, I put in 8 hours, yes.
And how does that feel? I mean, can you imagine doing that when you're 66, when you're 68, when you're 72? How's it go?
You know what? I hope that I can. It actually has been better for me to physically get out and to do the work. And the nice thing about it is, too, and it's a company policy, you don't do just one task all day long.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You are both from position to position, so it breaks up the monotony. It breaks up the wear and tear on your body.
And is the coffee free? Are you caffeinated all day, Molly?
Oh, absolutely. I am caffeinated from 5:30 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night.
Woohoo!
And you get a pound of free coffee every week.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that could really pep up those golden years. Molly, thank you very much for that report. I appreciate it. Teresa, is this the story of the American retiree future? Starbucks barista.
Well, you could already tell from her personality that they were glad to have her.
Yeah.
You know, she must be just
yeah.
great. But Starbucks is losing a lot of money. They're closing a lot of stores. It's really an unusual company to provide that kind of health insurance. So I'm sad to say it looks like it works for Molly, but you just can't scale up that experience. You can't expand that experience. Part-time jobs are going to be harder to find for older people as the younger people want those jobs. And they're not reliable, as you hinted at, because people's health makes those kinds of jobs actually hard to keep.
After a while. But it
After
sounds like Molly's
while.
Having a good time right now. We're glad to hear it. Let's go to Dan in Williston, Vermont. Dan, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you. I'm 60, and mm-hmm. I've lost about a third of my 401k value. But
sorry to hear it.
I think there is a silver lining to this.
Mm-hmm.
When Mr. Bush ran for president, he talked about how the budget surplus was our money and we deserve to get it back. I noticed nobody was saying it was our debt.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about mortgaging.
Right.
We've talked about mortgaging our children's future.
Mm.
Well, I think that we're now paying a down payment on that mortgage of our children's future. Houses are going to be less expensive. Young people can buy stock for less money. I think there's that silver lining to all of this.
That's a good and interesting angle, Dan, and thanks for sharing it. Glenn, what about it? Is this a correction that sort of clears the way for a younger generation? Dan makes the point. I've got another here from the website, onpointradio.org, from Alana. She says, baby boomers have always wanted and expected it all. This sense of entitlement really pumped the economy for 30 years. We still live in an extremely rich society. The bus will swing back to boom. We need patience, steady heads, and discipline. What do you say, Glenn?
Patience is a great virtue to have at this point in time. Younger people and certainly people in their 30s and 40s can benefit from the lower prices that are out there right now. I certainly think Warren Buffett is a good investor, and he sees the opportunities out there. And I can't emphasize enough that just because we have gone through this horrific time in the stock market, that people should not turn their backs on the stock market. Yes, I know that's the advice that we've been given for years, but to simply bail on the stock market or walk away from it now is as silly as having 100% of your investments in the stock market previous to this.
Teresa, though, I wonder if, and this kind of goes to Dan's suggestion, I mean, the boomers are really not the ones, as it appears now, who are going to have the super golden years. It's this post-World War II greatest generation from whom we got the image of beautiful condos along the links and, you know, lovely sweaters on the golf course and all the rest. Are we going to look back on that and say that was a one-time only, sort of two or three decades at the end of the 20th century American retirement, almost like a kind of brigadoon that appeared and disappeared?
Yeah, we might, but it doesn't make sense that we would have to. We can't afford for people to be able to retire. We have to really use our money in a smart way. I mean, taxpayers have to use it in a smart way to subsidize these retirements. So that's why, you know, I look at, you know, what America can provide, and I look at this $80 billion that we spend for 401ks and just ask, can we do it better? Can we supplement Social Security? That greater generation even had it better than you're even pointing out. They actually got the benefit of longer lives as well. Mm-hmm. So there was this time that people were living longer and retiring a little bit earlier and had this, you know, benefit of a growing society. We see it in other rich societies that people are living longer and able to retire. So there's no reason we can't do it. I'm concerned about the advice about people not losing faith on the stock market. And I think that financial advisors, you know, Glenn's a professional, I do it in my work, is that we don't say go back in the stock market, but we actually nuance that a bit and say that the stock market is appropriate for some people to save for their retirement, but not appropriate for all. And you should do it in a balanced way.
And what's the distinction? Who is it for, then, would you say, and who is it not for?
It's for people who have actually secured their retirement, their 70% minimum retirement, in some other way, with a guaranteed annuity or with Social Security top-up or their employer plan.
But what what percentage of Americans is that who have secured and for whom the stock market would just be a playground for maybe some extra spending money? That must be tiny.
It's probably about 40% because, look, there's the bottom third of workers are only going to get Social Security anyway, and if they have their house, that's great. I think that people should be in the stock market if they're in the top 20-30% of the income distribution. Maybe Glenn will disagree, but it's really for people at the top.
Let me get one more call. Kirsten in Charlotte, North Carolina. Kirsten, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. My father is 72, and so he's already taking his Social Security benefit.
Mm-hmm.
He's well invested in a traditional IRA, but now he's telling me that he is required to take disbursements that he doesn't really want to take. So at this point, he's taking a devalued IRA.
Right.
He's having to take money out of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's having to pay taxes on it, and he's not able to claim any loss on the money that he's losing in his IRA.
It just
seems like a double whammy.
Not a pretty picture. Let me ask you, Kirsten, has the issue of him potentially moving in with you ever come up?
Well, his house is paid for,
mm-hmm.
So he's not in that situation, but what he would really like to do would be able to leave his money alone. But he can't. He's required to take disbursements. And he's losing money hand over fist because he's taking it out.
Taking it out when it's down. Glenn, there's a picture that people are trapped in right now because the law says at a certain age you've got to begin to take it.
It is. After 70 and a half, after you reach age 70 and a half, Uncle Sam wants you to start taking money out of your savings accounts. One thing people have to keep in mind is that if it's possible, they can take what's called in-kind distributions from their IRAs. And this is important, particularly right now. You can take the withdrawal that's required by Uncle Sam, but you don't have to sell the stock itself if you take it in the form of stock. So people have to make sure they understand the idea of in-kind distributions and how that works. But getting back to Kirsten's original point, yes, people still have to take money out of their savings at a certain point in time. And that even got the attention of Obama and McCain in the campaign, where they said, well, gee, maybe we need to change the rules at least short term to give these people some relief. But at the moment, Washington seems preoccupied with the auto industry bailout as opposed to retiree help.
Well, it will be fascinating in the years ahead as this really bites to see what kind of reforms come down the pike. Teresa's talking about some kind of hybrid. You can read an excerpt from her new book, When I'm 64, at our website, onpointradio.org. For everyone out there who's wrestling with retirement, good luck to you. Teresa, what do you think? Within the next 4 years, are we likely to see something new on the horizon, something to help? Are people going to demand it?
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of talk about bold new models.
Bold new models.
New models.
Watch for that and save your pennies. Teresa Ghilarducci at the New School for Social Research, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And Glenn Rufinack with the Encore section at the Wall Street Journal, author of the Wall Street Journal Complete Retirement Guidebook, How to Plan It, Live It, and Enjoy It, joining us from Atlanta, Georgia. Glenn, thanks a lot for being here today.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.